What happens when you discover your entire life has been built on lies? For Penelope Belfour, this question becomes a shattering reality when she learns she's not just a scarred former maiden, but a descendant of gods with powers beyond imagination. Jennifer L. Armentrout's The Crown of Gilded Bones has captured millions of readers worldwide, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller and sparking a TikTok phenomenon with over 2 billion views under its hashtag. This third installment in the Blood and Ash series continues to blend fantasy, romance, and political intrigue in a way that has celebrities like Kylie Jenner recommending it and readers forming book clubs specifically to discuss its twists. As we follow Poppy's journey from reluctant bride to powerful queen, we witness a transformation that challenges everything she thought she knew about herself and the world around her. "You are proof that we came from the gods." These words echo through the Temple of Nyctos as I stand frozen in shock, my true nature revealed before the gathered Atlanteans. The woven, wolf-like creatures with fierce loyalty have just transferred their ancient bond from Prince Castile to me, confirming what Queen Eluana has just declared. I carry the blood of Nyctos, the king of gods, in my veins. My mind reels as I process this revelation. Moments earlier, I had killed several attackers without touching them, somehow channeling their own anger back at them through what Queen Eluana calls ether, the essence of gods in my blood, what some might call magic. The situation grows more chaotic when we realize Beckett, the young wolven who led me to the temple, has disappeared. Castile orders him found alive, though his tone suggests a grim fate awaits if the youth was involved in the attack. With cold determination that sends shivers down my spine, Castile declares that any move against me is a proclamation of war against him. His attention then turns to Elastir, his parents' advisor, with clear suspicion. The tension in the room thickens as Castile orders the guards to seize him, believing him involved in the attack. When King Valen protests that Elastir has committed no known crime, Castile argues that according to Atlantean tradition, he is now king since the queen removed her crown and told everyone to bow before me. The confrontation escalates when Elastir questions whether Castile has abandoned his mission to free his brother Malik. His words cut deep, and I feel Castile's familiar pain, that rawness like shards of ice against my skin. Unable to contain my anger, I step forward and snap that Castile hasn't abandoned Malik, that we will find and free him. My outburst causes visible distress for Queen Eluana, who asks Castile what he's done, her grief rolling off her in potent waves. I realize I may have revealed something I shouldn't have, but Castile assures me I have nothing to apologize for. The situation deteriorates rapidly when Elastir suddenly commands the guards to protect your king and queen. Chaos erupts as several guards surround Castile's parents. Jasper shifts mid-leap, but is struck by an arrow that turns his skin a pale gray color. Kieran is hit next, his skin turning ice cold as he tells me to run before collapsing. Then Castile is struck by multiple arrows leaking a strange gray substance. I catch him as he falls, his body rapidly hardening like stone, skin turning cold and lifeless. In seconds, he goes completely still, his eyes glazed over with a gray film. I desperately search for any sign of life, any emotion from him, but there's nothing. Rage, unlike anything I've ever known, consumes me. The temple begins to tremble as my fury manifests physically. Silvery white embers dancing over my skin, glittering cords stretching across the floor and columns. The stone beneath my feet shatters as I move, and I fight with inhuman skill and power, killing attacker after attacker as statues crack and break around us. Just as I prepare to bring down the entire temple, Elastir confronts me. "I'm not the threat to Atlantia. You are. You have always been the threat." Then pain explodes in the back of my head, and everything goes black. I wake to a disturbing nursery rhyme echoing in my head about a pretty poppy that bleeds when picked. Opening my eyes, I find myself face to face with a dusty human skull. I'm restrained by polished ivory bones and roots twisted painfully around my wrists and knees, digging into my skin. My sweater and pants are gone, leaving me in only a thin slip. Looking around in horror, I see I'm surrounded by skeletal remains similarly bound to the walls, dozens of them, some clearly having been there for centuries. The corpse beside me still has patches of stringy blonde hair and tattered clothing, with a black-bladed spear resting against its chest. Panic rises as I survey my surroundings, illuminated by torches jutting from gray-black columns, casting an orange glow across what appears to be an ancient prison. I realize I'm in a crypt filled with sarcophagi wrapped in the same bone and root chains binding me. The horror deepens when I understand I'm not the first prisoner here. A voice from the shadows warns me not to struggle, explaining these are unbreakable bones of deities imbued with primal magic, designed to immobilize dangerous threats. The mysterious man steps into the light, Commander Jansen, whom I believed dead. He reveals that Castile and the others are alive, and checking my palm, I see the golden marriage imprint still glowing faintly, confirming this. In a shocking transformation, Jansen shifts into Beckett, revealing himself as a changeling who can take others' forms with just a strand of hair. I realize it wasn't the real Beckett who led me into the trap at the temple. When I ask about the real Beckett, Jansen admits he killed the young Wolven when he woke unexpectedly, dismissing it as an unfortunate necessity. Later, Alastair joins us and delivers the most devastating revelation yet. I carry the blood of both Nyctos and King Malek. He recites a prophecy. With the last chosen blood spilled, the great conspirator, birthed from the flesh and fire of the primals, will awaken as the harbinger and the bringer of death and destruction. According to him, I am this harbinger from the West. Then comes the shocking revelation that Alastair knew my parents. He was the shadow figure from my fragmented memories of the night the Craven hacked. My mother wasn't a lady-in-wait, but a handmaiden to the queen, one of her personal guards. Though Alastair claims he came to help my parents escape, when he learned what I could do, he let the darkness in and abandoned us to the Craven attack. Now, rather than killing me and risking making me a martyr, he plans to give me to the Ascended. We're no longer within the Pillars of Atlantia, but in the Crypt of the Forgotten Ones in the Skotos Mountains, where Castile won't find me. When I accuse Alastair of working with the Ascended and staging a coup, he insists he's saving Atlantia, even if it means opposing the crown. He believes the Ascended will kill me, solving his problem. I wake outside under stars instead of in the crypt, strapped down by bone and root bindings. Commander Jansen reveals I'm in the ruins of Castle Bor in Ireland Deep, deep in the wastelands. A sentry announces, "They're here, the Ascended," as torches flare to life in the darkness beyond the ruins. Just as a blonde Ascended woman reaches for me, a bolt suddenly pierces her chest, followed by another through her head. Delano appears in wolven form, taking down a masked man as Kieran arrives to free me from the bone bindings that suppress my power. I learn they've been searching for me for 6 days, and that they captured Alastair. Castile appears in a murderous rage, brutally killing anyone in his path. As Kieran frees me completely, I feel my power return, the ether flowing through me again. For a moment, I consider unleashing my abilities to destroy everyone who betrayed us, but I pull back, refusing to become the monster Alastair claimed I would be. Taking Castile's sword, I thrust it into Jansen's chest. With his dying breath, Jansen cryptically says, "As do I," about keeping promises. Suddenly, I'm jerked backward by a crossbow bolt that pierces my chest, fired by one of the protectors before Jasper takes him down. The bolt pierces my chest, and I taste metal as blood fills my throat. Castile catches me as I collapse, his eyes wild with horror. The pain is overwhelming, worse than anything I've experienced before. Kieran tries to stabilize the bloodstone bolt while I struggle to breathe, blood bubbling from my lips. Terror grips me as I realize I can't feel my legs. Castile attempts to give me his blood, but I can't swallow it. Kieran gently tries to make Castile understand the severity,
The bolt has hit an artery and at least one lung, though not my heart. Lightning strikes repeatedly around us as I fade in and out of consciousness. Cian Castile's cry confirms what I already know. I'm dying. There's so much left unsaid, so much I still want to experience with him. As I slip away, Castile roars in anguish, and the ground beneath us cracks open. Ash-colored roots emerge, and a massive tree grows instantly, sprouting blood-red leaves. Despite his father's desperate protests and warnings about what will happen, Castile orders Kieran to remove the bolt. Before Kieran pulls it out, Castile compels me to look at him, declaring his love for me and vowing he will not lose me, even if I hate him for what he's about to do. When Kieran yanks the bolt free, my body convulses violently as pressure builds in my skull and chest. Castile strikes quickly, sinking his teeth into my throat. I realize with terror that he's attempting to ascend me. The pain is excruciating, nothing like the sensual experience of his previous bites. Lightning strikes all around us as my heart falters and then stops completely. Death sweeps in, swallowing me whole.
I float in nothingness. No light, no color, just hollow coldness. Eventually, a speck of silvery light appears in the distance, pulsing and expanding with wispy tendrils. As I drift toward it, a deep voice pulls me back, commanding me to drink. The voice fades, and I'm surrounded by warmth and the scent of lilacs. Time passes as I sleep deeply, occasionally feeling a damp cloth cleaning my body. In another memory fragment, I see my mother with a black spike in her hand, demanding, "How could you do this?" Then I encounter a woman with moonlight-colored hair and green eyes with silvery white light behind the pupils. She looks like me, with freckles across her nose, and sheds a blood-red tear before disappearing. Finally, I begin to wake, overcome by an intense hunger that makes my entire body ache. I open my eyes to see Kieran in a chair. Driven by instinct, I launch myself at him, but Castile catches me. When he offers his bleeding wrist, I drink his blood eagerly, which eases my pain. Castile forces me to look at him, his amber eyes filled with tears as he realizes I didn't ascend despite experiencing bloodlust. I have no fangs, yet I crave blood. Later, when I'm more coherent, Castile explains that he replaced all my blood with his own when my heart stopped. There's not a drop of mortal blood left in me. Both he and Kieran confirm I no longer feel or smell mortal. When I ask what I smell like now, Kieran reluctantly admits I smell of absolute, final power, unlike anything he's ever encountered. I learn I never became an ascended because I was never truly mortal. My divine heritage protected me from the transformation, though Castile's blood awakened more of my abilities. We also discover that the woven bond has transferred from Castile to me, an ancient connection that predates even the Atlanteans. Kieran explains that woven were given mortal form not to serve elemental bloodlines, but to serve the children of the gods, creating an instinctual bond passed through generations that now recognizes me. My greatest concern remains coming between Castile and Kieran, whose bond has shifted to me, but both reassure me their friendship transcends the mystical bond. Kieran explains they've made room for me in their relationship. As we travel through Atlantia, I notice that the golden trees of Ios have all transformed into blood trees with deep crimson leaves gleaming like pools of blood in the sunlight. This change, along with the trees that grew where my blood fell, confirms that my near-death experience has somehow transformed the landscape itself. When we arrive in Sion's Cove, I'm struck by its beauty. Ivory and sand-colored buildings gleam under the sun, dotting rolling hills and valleys. Unlike Macedonia or Carcedonia, there are no gates or inner walls, no buildings stacked upon one another, no scent of people forced to live in cramped spaces. As we approach the city, people slowly venture outside, men, women, children, staring at us with wide eyes. An older man in blue yells, "Our prince! Prince Castile! Our prince returns!"
A gasp ripples through the crowd, and doors open all along the road. Shouts of excitement and cheers fill the streets as people spill from buildings and lean from windows. Some fall to their knees, weeping as they call Castile's name. Then something unexpected happens. An elderly woman in a blue gown on a balcony slowly lowers herself to one knee and places her fist over her chest, bowing her head. Others follow, older men and women throughout the crowd. A man shouts, "Liesa! Maya Liesa!" The cry is taken up by others, including children who race forward. "What does that mean?" I ask Castile. "Liesa?" "It's old Atlantean, the language of the gods," Castile answers, his voice rough. "Maya Liesa. It means, my queen." Later, after we've settled in Jasper's home, Castile and I discuss what this means. He explains that if I don't take the throne, we cannot stay in Atlantia because my presence would create division. The Wolven and many Atlanteans would treat me as queen regardless of who wears the crown. "I don't want to be party to forcing you into yet another role you didn't ask for," he vows. "If you want to take the throne, I will set this kingdom on fire to ensure the crown sits on your head. If not, we'll go wherever you want." His devotion overwhelms me. As I contemplate my options, I realize I have no thirst for power, but I do have great ambitions, particularly freeing the people of Solis from the Ascended. I fear failing as queen, but Castile reassures me that my compassion, courage, and willingness to take risks are qualities of a good ruler. Our conversation is interrupted when Delano arrives with news of an injured child whose father has come seeking my healing abilities. When I learn a child has been severely injured in a carriage accident, I immediately rush to help. The little girl's leg is twisted unnaturally, her light brown hair streaked with blood. Despite her parents' desperate pleas, she won't open her eyes. As I place my hands on her, they begin to glow with silver light that spreads across her entire body like a shimmery web. I channel all the joy and happiness I can, recalling how I felt when Castile slipped the ring on my finger. I repeat to myself, "It's not too late. She will live." Suddenly, the child jerks and speaks, "Mama." Her skin turns pink, her eyes open, and she sits up reaching for her mother. Castile looks at me with wonder, whispering, "You are a goddess." Around us, everyone in the garden, including Kieran and the skeptical healer, drops to one knee with hands pressed to their chest. The little girl mentioned dreaming of a lady who told her she always had the power in her, words that seem strangely familiar to me. After this miraculous healing, I decide to accept my destiny. I will take the crown, feeling a sense of rightness despite the bittersweet knowledge that forces had tried to prevent this moment. Castile bows his head, calling me my queen for the first time, and I request that the crest be changed to make the arrow and sword equal. We arrive at the temple in Evamon, where King Valin and Queen Eloana stand beside their thrones of pearlescent shadowstone with golden veins. Both wear their crowns, the kings of twisted bleached bone, the queens of shining golden bone. After briefly discussing an attack by the unseen, a secret brotherhood we've discovered is working against us, I announce our purpose. We have come to claim what is mine, the crown and the kingdom. When Valin asks what if they contest my claim, I stand firm, explaining how my parents were killed, I was left scarred, and my brother was ascended, all because of my birthright. Despite everything meant to prevent this moment, I've arrived to claim what belongs to me and Castile. Queen Eloana accepts our decision, saying, "It's time. It's been time." King Valin agrees, but warns that this responsibility doesn't end after we accomplish what we seek. We decline a traditional, elaborate coronation until after we've handled the Western threat. As the Council of Elders emerges from the shadows, Lord Grigori voices concerns about transferring power during wartime, revealing his distrust. When I ask about his specific concerns, he admits they're uncomfortable with a foreigner taking the throne, especially one raised as the maiden by their enemies. I respond diplomatically, acknowledging our shared enemies and loyalties, while hoping to prove myself worthy of his trust. Castile and I kneel before the king and queen in a formal ceremony. Valen announces they relinquish their crowns of their own free will for our rightful ascension. When they place the crowns on the floor, a whirl of air sweeps through the temple, revealing the gilded bone beneath. We each swear to watch over Atlantia with kindness, strength, compassion, and justice, from this moment to your last moment. As the crowns are placed on our heads, silver-white flames ignite in the torches throughout the temple, and we rise as the new king and queen of Atlantia. I'm stunned to discover that one of the council members is actually Wilhelmina Collins, Miss Willa herself, author of the scandalous diary I've been reading. She reveals she's a changeling and one of Atlantia's greatest seers. She explains that when she saw me at the Red Pearl, she recognized me as the maiden, wearing a mask, and knew Castile was seeking the same thing I was, to truly live. When I ask about the prophecy, Willa delivers a chilling message. I'm not the great conspirator the unseen believe me to be, but one of two who will stand between what has awakened and the retribution it seeks to reap against man and God. After the council meeting, we proceed to the temple balcony, where thousands of people have gathered. Willa introduces us to the kingdom. She presents Castile as the King of Blood and Ash, and me as Penelope Balfour Denier, the Queen of Flesh and Fire. The crowd responds with silence, until wolven begin howling, followed by people pounding the ground with their feet and fists. Castile explains this means they're mine and willing to go to war for me if needed. Our reign is quickly tested when we receive word that my brother Ian has arrived at Spess's End with a message from the Blood Crown. Despite concerns it might be a trap, I insist on meeting him. When we arrive, I'm devastated to confirm that Ian has indeed been ascended, his eyes now pitch black. Ian speaks with false concern about rescuing me from the Dark One, but I immediately correct him. I'm not a hostage, but Castile's wife. He tries to convince me I've been misled, claiming the queen and king are worried about me, but I embrace my anger instead of grief, calling myself their blood bag and confronting him with the truth about the ascended. When I ask about Tani and Malik, Ian claims they're safe and well cared for and offers us the chance to see for ourselves. That's why he's come. The true queen has requested a meeting with us in Oak Ambler in a fortnight, promising our safety if we leave our northern armies behind. Before leaving, Ian hugs me and whispers something shocking. I know the truth. Wake Nyctas. Only his guards can stop the Blood Crown. Following Ian's advice, Castile and I journey through ancient tunnels beneath the Temple of Nyctas to reach Elysium, the land of the gods. There, we discover what appears to be a stone dragon statue. When I touch it, the statue cracks open, revealing a living draken named Nyctas. Before we can react, we sense another presence, a tall man with coppery brown hair and luminous silver eyes standing on the temple steps. It is Nyctas himself, the king of gods, awakened from his slumber. Nyctas reveals ancient history about the primal gods and explains that I have primal blood, which explains my powerful abilities. When I ask for his guards' help against the revenants, mysterious beings the Blood Crown possesses, Nyctas's demeanor changes dramatically. He calls them an abomination of life and death and a greater evil, apologizing for what I would face. Before dismissing me, he declares, "You are a bringer of life and a bringer of death. You are the queen of flesh and fire. Do more than one crown. What you seek, you already have. You always had the power in you." Despite Nyctas's cryptic message, we proceed with our plan to meet the Blood Queen in Oak Ambler. We travel by ship across the Stroud Sea, with a decoy group traveling by land to draw attention. When we arrive at Castle Red Rock, we discover a caged shapeshifter and encounter a handmaiden, a masked woman with crescent-shaped shadowstone blades who effortlessly subdues Delano despite her small stature. Ian leads us to the Great Hall where we find our captured friends and, to my shock, Tani, who hadn't ascended. During our brief reunion, Tani whispers a warning that the queen isn't what she seems. Queen Ailina enters in her magnificent crimson gown, wearing the Blood Crown, 12 ruby hoops connected by onyx and topped with diamond spires. But the true shock comes when Pastille recognizes the man beside her, his brother Malik, somehow alive and standing at the queen's side. Queen Ileana demonstrates the terrifying power of the Revenants when the handmaiden, stabbed through the heart, suddenly revives. Her fingers twitched first, then her entire body convulsed as she gasped for breath and sat up. The queen explained that Revenants cannot easily be killed. They could be stabbed with bloodstone, have their throats cut, be set on fire, or have limbs severed, yet they always come back whole. In a shocking revelation, she claims to be my mother, not grandmother. When challenged about being a vampire who couldn't bear children, Eon confirms her claim. The queen explains that Coralina was actually Eon's mother, who had been tasked with protecting me from those who might use me. When Coralina discovered plans to marry me to Prince Malik, she fled with the child, ultimately facing the queen's wrath despite being a revenant herself. Finally, the queen reveals her true identity. She is Isbeth, King Malik's former lover, who had been poisoned with belladonna by Eloana. Malik saved her by giving her his blood, but unlike Atlanteans, whose blood creates vampires, his blood had transformed her into something else entirely. When Castile steps forward to refuse the queen's terms, she dismisses him as merely a pretty accessory to me. Castile warns her not to underestimate him. I'm also a very deadly accessory. The Blood Queen smirks and demands Atlantia again, threatening consequences if refused. I question how surrendering Atlantia would end the suffering of innocence or stop the Ascended's predation. When I firmly refuse, Isbeth coldly orders, "Kill him." In a horrifying instant, a knight beheads Eon. Blood sprays everywhere as his head rolls across the floor, leaving everyone in shock, Tawny screaming, Malik stepping back in disbelief, and Castile trying desperately to shield me from the sight. Isbeth screams that she loved Eon like her own flesh and blood, then cruelly adds, "Look at what you made me do." In the chaos that follows, Castile is captured while I and the others barely escape. Back in Atlantia, I confront Queen Eloana about the truth, that she knew Ileana was actually Isbeth and that she was never a vampire. Eloana admits she hid the truth out of embarrassment, not wanting people to know Isbeth had won by becoming queen after taking her husband. I also learn from Nectis that Malik is not my father. My true father is Iris, Malik's twin and son of Nyctos. I realize the caged creature I saw with the Blood Queen was actually my father. Nectis explains that Iris was lured from Elysium along with his daughter Jadis. He confirms that gods cannot die when entombed, but exist in a state between dying and death. With this knowledge, I embrace my divine heritage fully. I summon the dragon. I summon the flesh and fire of the gods to protect me and those I care for, to ride at my side and stand guard at my back. I call upon the bloodline birthed of flesh and fire to awaken. Dozens of draken emerge from beneath the temple, their scales gleaming as they take flight toward the mountains of Nyctos and eventually towards Solus and Carcedonia.
4 days later, I wait in the forest outside Oak Ambler with Delano, Kieran, and several draken. As night falls, I prepare to execute my plan, approaching the city where we encounter a dozen knights and a revenant guarding King Jalara himself. The Blood King mocks me, taunting me about Castile's captivity and torture. When he refuses to deliver my message to the Blood Queen, I reveal that he himself is the message. In a swift, brutal attack, I behead the king while Kieran holds him. Using my godly powers, I tear apart the knights from within without summoning the ether. I order the surviving revenant to deliver King Jalara's severed head to the Blood Queen, keeping his ruby crown as my own. My message is clear. I'm coming for the Blood Queen, will destroy everything in my path, and will make the queen suffer for thousands of years if Castile is harmed. I declare myself the Chosen, the one who is blessed, carrying the blood of the King of Gods, the Laesa to the Wolven, the true heir to both crowns, the Queen of Flesh and Fire, and tell the Blood Queen to prepare for war.
As the gates of the Northern Wall open, hundreds of Atlantean soldiers ride out, led by Valen and the Guardians. Banners bearing the Atlantean crest, now with the arrow and sword crossed over the center, ripple in the sun as I close my eyes, telling myself that Castile would see them. Large winged shadows fall over the armies of Atlantia as they ride west. The journey that began with my discovery of divine heritage has transformed me completely. No longer the veiled maiden or even just an Atlantean queen, I have embraced my true nature as a descendant of gods. With the dragon at my command and the armies of Atlantia behind me, I ride to war against the Blood Queen who dared to take my husband and kill my brother. The crown of gilded bones now rests firmly on my head, and I will use its power to reshape both kingdoms and rescue those I love, no matter the cost.